Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, November 15th, day number 319 of 2011, and tonight we're going to have our Hispanic Roundtable. We have several friends of the show who are going to be joining us tonight for a discussion of various issues: Fausta Wirth of Fausta's blog, Adriana Boyne of Voces Action here in North Texas, George Rodriguez of the San Antonio Tea Party, and we have a new friend of the show tonight, and that's Jose Castro Frenzel, originally from Nicaragua. He lives here in the Dallas area and also very actively involved in politics. So tonight we're going to go around the table a little bit and talk about other issues that are of concern to Hispanics here in the United States. You know, we always do on this day in history. Well, on this day in history, if you like music like I do, on this day in history, 1956, Elvis Presley made his first movie. This was Love Me Tender. Actually, that's not a bad movie. Most of Elvis's movies were pretty silly, but Love Me Tender was actually a pretty decent movie. It was actually a movie based during the Civil War. That's the time frame of the movie. And it's actually a pretty decent movie, and some of the songs out of that movie, of course, were bestsellers for Elvis. But on this day, Love Me Tender by Elvis Presley. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with Fausta Wirth right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and let's say hello to Fausta Wirth. How are you, Fausta?
Oh, doing great, Silvio. Thank you.
Now, you don't have before we get into the serious stuff, do you have any comments at all about Elvis Presley's Love Me Tender, or is that completely out of your area of expertise?
I like the younger Elvis better than the older Elvis, but I hated all the movies.
You know, you're exactly right. The movies were really bad for the most part. And I think even Elvis himself didn't like them. I've read this, that he didn't like them. He really began to hate them because they all became very routine and very predictable movies. But he did, as long as we're doing the Hispanic Roundtable, he did do Fun in Acapulco. So that's our Hispanic mention of Elvis Presley tonight. But Fausta, you have a wonderful blog called Fausta's Words, and we have you on, called Fausta's Blog, and you have a great blog called Fausta's Blog, and we have you on many times to talk about national security and U.S. Latin American relations. We have a lot of new listeners tonight, so why don't you tell us just a little bit how you got into blogging so much about U.S. and Latin American relations?
I basically started blogging about New Jersey politics, and I got discouraged because I thought it was a total lost cause. At the same time that I had continued for many, many years reading foreign newspapers from either Spanish language or Portuguese, so once I was able to find them online, it was an interest that I continue to develop in the blog, and that's how I do a lot of the posting I do. I basically research things in the country where the events happen. I mean, from the country where the events happen, depending on whether it's the news on TV, YouTubes or internet, you know, versions of the local newspapers, and I post on them, but I try to find the news in English so that I, because my blog has mostly an English-speaking audience, and that's how it all developed. It kind of grew.
That's right. Well, that's the way blogs tend to be. You know, you start off with a little audience, and then you pick up a loyal audience as you go. But one of the things that, of course, of interest to a lot of Hispanics, I think we have to appreciate the fact that Hispanics in the United States, there's different groups of Hispanics, and there are people like you and me, Fausta, who still have a very strong connection, in my case, Cuba, a very strong connection to Latin America. So we're interested in news about Latin America, and one of the reasons that we bring you on the show is to talk about a lot of these things. And there's a great story in your blog today, and I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about that tonight. In your research, you came up with a article about Che Guevara and how Che Guevara at one time, I guess, I'm familiar with the diary. For those who may not realize this, and Che Guevara was killed in 1967, and they obviously discovered some information. He had a diary that was actually published. But I guess, Fausta, this is more. This is sort of a secret diary that Che Guevara had written, and it's not exactly a symbol of diversity. I think a lot of his fans, particularly in the left, are going to be very, very disappointed with what Che Guevara thought of, for example, black people.
Well, it wasn't so much as secret. It was something that he wrote while he was in Congo fighting for basically a communist revolution. What happened was this document was not released for many years, and now it has been translated. It's called The African Dream, and it shows Che for the racist, hateful person he really was. He was tremendously bigoted against Africans. He had he knew that the mission that he had was going to be a total failure from very early on. And he was a very hateful person in his thinking too. So I am surprised that it had not been released earlier. But this was something that he wrote in 1965.
Yeah. So this would have been a couple of years before he was killed. But I think what's interesting about Che is that he's become this great left-wing, you know, symbol. In fact, speaking of immigration, during some of the immigration marches, there were actually people with placards of Che Guevara, which I told some of these people not to do that in Miami, that wouldn't be a bad idea to march in Miami with placards of Che Guevara. But the point is, he's become a symbol, and for a lot of people who don't know who he is, I guess he can be whatever they want him to be. For people like me and you who've actually researched this man, this guy was a criminal. He was not a very good person, as you say. He was full of hate. And, you know, I just think that it's justice to bring out the truth of Che Guevara so that some of the young people who are walking around with these T-shirts of Che Guevara so that they kind of know who we're talking about, Fausta.
Well, this is a man that has been documented as having killed 265 people himself between 1959 and 1961. And this is the names of the people has been documented by the Cuba Archives online, and they have notarized sworn statements by at least two witnesses of each of the victims. This is a guy who pistol whipped the Bolivians that he had, the Bolivians, indigenous people that he was using when he was in Bolivia many years later, which is one of the reasons why the Bolivians didn't feel too bad when he was finally killed. And this is somebody who was thoroughly, very racist against Africans and in particular, but blacks in general. So, I mean, he says, one of the quotes that they have in an article at Reason Online is, quote, given the prevailing lack of discipline, it would be impossible to use Congolese machine gunners to defend the base from air attacks. They did not know how to handle their weapons and did not want to learn. And this is one of his better moments. So I have never, ever understood why Che Guevara has become such a cult figure. To me, it is a testament to the ignorance of any person who wears a Che Guevara T-shirt.
You're exactly right, and And I should add that we've had on our show Humberto Fontova, the great Cuban-American author, and he's written some very good books about Che Guevara, and I would definitely recommend to anybody to check those out, because he's done his homework, and Che Guevara is not what most people think he was. I have one reference to Che Guevara, and this is his diary, or at least the official diary that was published years ago. And in the last days of his life, I don't know if you've read this, Fausta, but in the last week or so of his life, he was actually a very frustrated man, because he knew that he wasn't going to succeed. I mean, he went to Bolivia. They basically went to Bolivia, as I understand it, because they wanted to find a very poor country in which to do a revolution. So they said, we'll go to Bolivia, we'll go to the poorest country. But then when he got into the jungle and he ran into some of the Bolivian people, they looked at him and they said, oh, you mean you're coming here to save us, you from Argentina? Coming here to save us? And it just didn't click. I mean, he just didn't click with the people. And at the end of his life, the last week or so of his life, the postings, I guess we do blogs now, but back then they actually wrote it down on a diary. The postings were of a man who was beaten, who was frustrated, and who knew that he was massively losing this effort. And that's what I read, that this man was a loser, and it's an absolute shame, and you're exactly right, that anybody in this planet would cling to the image of Che Guevara. They, as you say, you use the right word, Fausta, total, complete ignorance, Fausta.
And it, on top of everything else, Che Guevara was a complete hypocrite. Anybody who has read Carlos Herrera's wonderful book, Waiting for Snow in Havana, recalls that the first thing that Che Guevara did once he got himself at the top of the hierarchy in Cuba was to commandeer one of the best mansions in Havana and live in there. This is the guy who thinks that the indigenous in Bolivia and the Africans in Congo are going to jump to the revolution.
Yeah, no, it didn't work out that way. But see, Fausto, this is why we love to have you on the show, because we get to talk about these issues that are of interest to a lot of Hispanics like you and I, U.S.-Latin American relations, and we absolutely love your blog. It's called Fausta's Blog, and you can just, I guess, type Fausta's Blog, and it comes up. And you're going to learn a great deal about politics. You're going to learn a great deal about a lot of things, including, and I know you get embarrassed every time I say this, but including tango. We find that Fausta is a very big fan of tango. So if you like tango, she'll put some videos in there, and you can enjoy that as well as all the politics. But Fausta, I know your time is limited tonight, but I want to thank you so much for being a part of our Hispanic Roundtable. I think you're a great symbol of Hispanics in the United States and the great diversity that there is, the great creativity that there is among Hispanics. So thank you so much for joining us tonight. And all I can say is we'll have you back some other time to talk about U.S.-Latin American relations.
Thank you, Silvio. It's always a pleasure and an honor.
All right, Fausta. Good night. And now we're going to bring in Adriana Boyne. Good night, Fausta. Let's see where Adriana is. She's right here. Adriana Boyne, how are you? How are you tonight?
Good evening. I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Adriana Boyne with Voces Action. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we are talking to a group of Hispanics tonight, and we're talking about things that they do in their organizations and issues of interest to them. And we were just talking to Fausta Wirtz, who's a great blogger, from the East Coast, and she writes a great deal about U.S. and Latin American relations. And Fausta, you have an organization called Adriana, you have an organization called Voces Action. So why don't you tell us about that?
Well, as I have said before, I actually have two organizations. One is Voces, and the other one is Voces Action. Voces means voices offering conservative, empowering solutions to educate and empower the Latino community with conservative values. It's a 501c3, but Voces Action is a 501c4 that takes into action in not only educating the community, but encouraging them to go to the polls and elect the office, the legislators according to those values, and where we can also in the media debate and contrast our values with those who disagree. So I debate very often the liberal Democrats at the national level, the state level, and local level. So that's some of the things that we do.
I should add that today Univision had part two of a series of reports. I think there's three altogether, and you were one of the featured guests today, and I congratulate you on that. Let me ask you a question. How important is this whole issue of family to the Hispanic community, the family values, whether we're talking about marriage, whether we're talking about abortion, whether we're talking about schools? How important, in your opinion, in your contacts with Hispanics at different levels, how important is that issue to them?
Well, values are always important for the Latino community. The problem that we have is that many times, because some Latinos or some part of the Latino community feel that those values are not important to communicate or to share, and they need to know that they are very important. So they do leave those values, they stand on those values, but it doesn't show in the poll. Sadly, we don't understand. And sometimes they put other issues above the values. They think they misunderstand what the rule of law is all about. They misunderstand the rhetoric by some people, and they think that maybe that is the reason that they need to vote for people who are totally against our values. But I'm talking only about the social or moral values, like being pro-life or believing marriage is between one man and one woman. We're talking also about fiscal values, because most Latinos like to be conservative fiscally and keep most of the money that they earn instead of giving it to the government so they can do whatever they want with our money. But they don't understand those concepts, so we need to be educating them on those issues. So it is important.
Yeah.
Talking about the program that you say about Hispanics and the Tea Party, this is actually a project that Fernando Pizarro of Univision asked me to help him to do, and I was very pleased to help him to do all this and getting the proper people to interview. So during the three programs, you're going to see, Silvio, that many of the guests that they are in the show, as a matter of fact, all of the guests are my personal friends, which I was very glad, including you, to include them in this program, because I thought that it was important that they could see different Latinos who are conservative and who are knowledgeable, and they understand the issue very well. So I was very pleased, and we'll still have to see part three.
Yeah, part three, I guess, will be tomorrow, but I agree with you. I think Fernando Pizarro did a nice job in the first two parts of presenting a pretty balanced approach. But I think it seems to me, and we'll get into this topic a little bit later also with George Rodriguez and with Jose Castro Frenzo, but it looks to me, and I think we may be getting a call from Armando Vera, but I have not confirmed that. One of the things that I believe that we are not doing as conservative Hispanics, or as conservatives in general, it seems that we're losing the battle with Hispanics because the liberals are able to play the victim card with Hispanics, and they do it in a very effective way. But yet there's a lot of issues where we should be talking, for example, about school choice. We should be talking about marriage. We should be talking about for example, graduating from high school. I mean, the number of Hispanic kids not graduating from school is very sad. And we're losing the battle. For some reason, the liberals have been more effective at that game. Now, I don't think that's going to be like that forever, because I think the Tea Party is connecting with Hispanics. But my sense, Adriana, is that we've lost, you know, the liberals have won the communication battle, at least so far. And we've got to turn that around.
Yes, they do that, but also I do believe that the liberals and conservatives both have some part of responsibility. Certainly, the liberals have done their job trying to influence the Latino community, letting them know that they are the ones who care for the Latino community, which is not true. But on the other side, there is some people in the conservative side that they use the ground rhetoric. And with that rhetoric, they burn bridges that you or I or other people who are trying to get people into thinking and into voting their values, or they put just away. I mean, the words make a lot of effect on people. And really, the way the tone of voice that use talking about an issue, it affects people's lives, and many times they will not listen if they will hear harsh rhetoric on the conservative side. So we need to be very careful when we approach certain issues using Spanish. There are some conservatives who do not like that we are speaking in Spanish. There are some conservatives who do not want any type of immigration. Numbers USA and FAIR are totally anti-immigration. They don't want legal immigration. They don't want people, because it's a pro-abortion agenda, hidden agenda on those groups. And a lot of conservatives follow those groups, John Tanton groups, because they think, oh, they are anti-legal immigration groups, when really they are anti-population environmentalists. And many, many times that's what the Latino community are listening. So we need to just be very careful, and the people need to listen to people like you, people like Rafael Cruz, Ted Cruz, Ian Costa, other people who really understand that we need to have legal immigration. Marco Rubio just said it recently, and they are great. Senator Rubio make the point that we need to fix that immigration system and expedite the legal immigration, which I also stress. But as you say before, we're not monolithic. We don't want to be talking about immigration, but you and I are all the time. You and I agree when the media interview us, that's the main thing that they want us to talk about, right, Silvio?
No, that's right, and that's one of the frustrations. Well, that's one of the frustrations I have. Is that sometimes the Spanish media only wants to talk about immigration, as if immigration was the only topic that matters to us. Immigration is a topic, and I have views on it. But I don't think it is the only topic. I think the economy is just as important. For example, let me give you another topic that I think is extremely important. Afghanistan, and let me explain how that impacts Hispanics. There are right now 100,000 troops in Afghanistan. These troops are in harm's way. As we know, there are casualties. And probably 10%, I'm going to guess, that 10% of the troops in Afghanistan are probably Hispanic, maybe more. And when you look at the casualty reports, for example, we had a funeral in our church of a young man who was killed in Iraq, Hispanic. There was a very famous young man, I say famous because he died in a very heroic fashion, a young man from Irving, a Marine, who was killed in Afghanistan, Hispanic. So the point I'm trying to make is that there are a lot of Hispanic mothers who every night go to sleep knowing that their son is in Afghanistan or in Iraq or North Korea or the Korean Peninsula, and these young men are in harm's way, and I would have to think that Afghanistan is just as important to those Hispanic families as it is to everybody else. And it seems like
that's right.
That I guess my point is that there's more to a Hispanic in the United States than immigration. But I do want to say one thing. And then I know you have to go, but I do want to say one thing. Very often, and you're exactly right, some of the rhetoric that comes from our side of the fence very often is extremely offensive, and we shouldn't have that kind of rhetoric. And you know, Adriana, that at every opportunity that I've had, whether in Spanish or English, I always get up and I say, look, that language doesn't apply. But what bothers me a little bit is that we never hear the rhetoric from the other side. In other words, for some reason, it seems like the Spanish media only uses one ear, and it doesn't use the other ear. For example, I've been called a racist. I've been called an anti-immigrant. We have a guest coming up in a few minutes, George Rodriguez, who was called a Nazi in San Antonio at a public forum. So it looks, I mean, there's a lot of bad language that comes from the other side, but for some reason, I don't know why, for some reason, that never gets any publicity. And I wish that everybody on both sides, Adriana, would stop screaming at each other, because we're not communicating when we are screaming to each other. So that's, I just wanted to put that in as you were talking about rhetoric, Adriana.
Yes, certainly they need to, but we need to be careful also how we speak, and certainly we are, because we know, I believe in the rule of law, and I have been very strong about that, and I believe in respecting the laws, protecting our borders. But I also believe in personal responsibility. And as Americans, we are in this mess because we allow that mess to be. So we have entitlements because we have allowed that. We need to get rid of entitlements the right way. So in other words, I don't believe that if right now we have an entitlement allowed, we're going to attack the people who receive the entitlements. We need to attack those who are voting to have the entitlements, and we need to remove the entitlement line, especially if the people who are receiving those entitlements are innocent of the situation. I believe in limited government, and I don't like entitlements. Certainly, in certain moments, some mothers may be needed who are in a deep, deep need, but I think it should be a temporary benefit that people should have, not a lifestyle. But at the same time, we allow these. So just to put an example to you, and we talk about this in another show, the issue that illegal immigrants receive free education in our country is not the fault of those children. It's our fault as Americans for allowing that. We don't like it. Let's change it. But let's don't attack those kids. The kids are here because the parents brought them, but we cannot attack the kids. We need to stop this, you know.
No, I agree. Look, just as a closing thought with you, I was brought to the United States by my parents. Okay,
yes.
My parents made the decision to come here. So they brought me and my brother and my sisters to the United States when I was a boy. Now, I'm glad they did it. It worked out great, and I'm delighted they did it. But they made that decision for me, and I'm delighted that they did. And I think when you have kids here who are 10, 11, 12 years old, who were brought over by their parents, I mean, sure, there's some responsibility, but I'm not going to beat up the kid because of that particular reason. Well, Adriana, I know that you've got some other commitments tonight, but I want to thank you so much for joining us. It's always a delight to talk to you. Adriana Boyne of Voces Action, as well as Voces, and she's a very active spokeswoman here in North Texas for family values and Hispanic issues. And I want to wish you a good evening, and give my best to your good husband, Daryl. Give my best
to
him.
Thank you very much. Okay.
And we will talk later. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back right after this. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and let's say hello from San Antonio to our good friend George Rodriguez. How are you, George?
Real good. How are you?
Good. I think you've been listening
very, very well.
Very interesting
comments.
Well, thank you very much. And of course, you're the aforementioned George Rodriguez that I talked about a minute that I mentioned that you were the victim of a of a personal attack, and I think that's important to bring it up. I mean, not to relive it or bring it back, but it's just because the truth of the matter is, the point I was trying to make is that there's a lot of attacks both ways, and there's a lot of people who attack both ways, and I think both sides need to stop attacking each other. But it's not just our side that attacks. The other side attacks, too, and they do it, as I mentioned before. I've been called a racist. I've been called anti-immigrant, and I don't appreciate that, and I wish that, you know, I wish that their side would get as much, if you will, reprimand for some of the language that they use, George.
Well, let me make this comment, and I think I've made it before. Is that one of the headaches that I've got, Silvio, is that when an attack does occur on a leftist, when someone says something about the left, there are tons and tons of leftist liberals, Hispanics that come to their rescue, as well as the liberal media anyway, and they just really, really come out and just defend the individual. On the other hand, when someone on the right is attacked, there aren't very many Hispanics on the right, Hispanics conservatives that come out and say anything. And I think that that's one of the headaches that we face sometimes, is that we don't rally around our own.
Right.
When Rubio was attacked the other day.
Yeah.
When Rubio was attacked. I mean, I didn't hear anybody come to his defense in any form or fashion. And when Ted Cruz has been attacked here in Texas, you know, I hear very few people come to his defense as well.
Right.
And we've got to defend our own. I mean, we've got to draw a line in the sand and say, okay, you may not agree with what this individual is saying, but that's no reason for a personal attack, and that certainly is not a reason for any attacks on their character.
That's exactly right. I think we've got Jose Castrofenster on the line. Are you there, Jose? Hello? Hello? Is it? I'm sorry. I thought this was Jose Castro Frenzel calling in. I apologize. But anyway, I think you're exactly right, George, and I think we, you know, I know, for example, that I came to the defense of Marco Rubio. Many people did. We thought it was an unfair attack. But I think the larger issue, though, that I personally would like to talk to you tonight, and that is that there's a lot of issues of interest to Hispanics, and you're certainly a lot closer to it being in San Antonio with a much larger Hispanic population than what we have here. But you got issues like the economy. You've got issues, the immigration reform, but I don't think that's as high as people make it out to be. You have issues of school choice. You have issues of crime, national security. You heard me tell Adriana that there's 100,000 troops in Afghanistan. I'm going to guess 10% of those are Hispanics. So that means that you've got 10,000 mothers every night going to bed knowing that their son is in harm's way. So I bet those families are concerned about Afghanistan and national security. So Hispanics have a lot of concerns, George. That's the point I'm trying to make.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We are a diverse community, and we are just like anybody else. There are many things that we care about. It's just not about immigration. And when we are portrayed in such a manner, I think that that does us a disservice. And when we fall into that trap, that does us a very disservice. We do ourselves a disservice.
Yeah. No, I think, for example, one of the points that I was making, I think, to the gentleman from Univision when I was talking with him about a week or so ago, is that the point I was making is that there's never going to be any serious attempt to reform immigration or to give people work visas or to legalize some of the people who are here as long as we have 9% unemployment.
That's right.
You know, people are going to say, why are you legalizing them when we've got unemployment? The truth of the matter is, many of these people are doing work that they're not necessarily replacing an American, let's say. But
that's
the bottom
right.
line is, the you know, from a presentation standpoint, when you're sitting there and you've got 9% unemployment, George, it's pretty hard to say, oh, okay, well, let's legalize another 10 million people. I mean, politically, you can't do that.
That's exactly
and that's
right.
a real problem.
That's
real
exactly
problem,
right.
George.
It's very hard to justify that.
Yeah, it's very hard to justify it. So until we deal with the economic issue, until we have an economy that is creating more jobs, it seems to me that there's not going to be any immigration reform. And until we have a border that is more secured and people feel better about the border, there isn't going to be immigration reform either. So, I mean, that's just the reality. That's just the reality, George.
I agree 100%. I agree 100% with you. That's exactly right. And again, those are just not the those are not our only issues. There are ways until we can back down and we can talk about the economy. Only then will we be able to talk about immigration in a more rational manner. We really are. You know, education. The other issue is very important. We've got a dropout rate that's staggering, and now. Shocked of shocks, we've got Hispanics as the largest group in poverty now. Why would that be? If we've got such a huge dropout rate, why would we be surprised that the poverty rate is now so high in the Hispanic community? And again, how do we address that issue? Is something that's critical for our community to begin to talk about rather than just to be talking about immigration.
Right, and just in the last couple of years, I have been talking in situations where I've spoken to Hispanic parents here in the Dallas area, and they are deeply concerned about education. They're very concerned about educational reform. One of the issues, and we've talked about this, George, before, but I know being with the Tea Party, you support school choice, but I think this is a great opportunity for us to communicate with Hispanics and say, look, you know, we're going to give you an opportunity to choose a school for you to send your kids to, and I think that this is something that a lot of Hispanics are interested in, but I don't know how much coverage that particular issue has gotten in the Spanish-speaking media. I mean, I don't know. I don't see much coverage of school choice.
That's exactly right. I mean, again, the Spanish language media seems to be focused, you know, unhealthily. It seems to be focused on the issue of immigration, and I think that's more because they're looking at a group, or they're catering to a group that is their bread and butter as far as watching their program. But if they really wanted to do a service, they would cover all the other issues. The issue of education and choice is critical to us because, again, particularly in Texas and anywhere, the idea of a school, the idea of a public school, has always been the idea of a community, entity. Now, when your community begins to go to become extremely poor, then the liberals come up with this wonderful idea of busing people. You know, well, let's send them someplace else. Well, instead of busing them, why not give them a voucher? Why not give them a choice as to where they can either stay in their community or they can go someplace else? But see, you know, liberals aren't very big about giving people choices. They'd rather do it in a mandatory manner. And as we have seen, you know, whenever they've done busing, busing has just been a total disaster, a total failure. And school vouchers, when you explain that to people, they have worked very, very well in Los Angeles. They've worked very, very well in other communities where they've been attempted. But again, the problem is that you've got school districts that are managed more by folks who are interested in their own jobs and in their own unions rather than in what the children are being taught.
Right. You know, George, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. We got a few minutes, but I want to get your thoughts on this. When I was speaking to, and in fact, this part of my interview with Fernando Pizarro did come out on the portion that was televised, and I'm very happy that it did. But he was asking me, when did I become active, or when did I become interested in the Tea Party? And I said to him that for me personally, it was around March of 2009 when I began to see the expenditures getting totally out of control, you know, the stimulus, and that I always saw the Tea Party, or my involvement in the Tea Party, more from the standpoint of taxes and the economy, not necessarily some of the other issues, but specifically taxes and the economy and eventually the debt that we were leaving our children. That's what got me into it. What about you?
That's exactly. Well, my involvement began when I heard Nancy Pelosi. Now, again, having worked in Washington, having worked on Capitol Hill, having worked in the Reagan administration, I knew, I've always known how government is supposed to work from a constitutional point of view. When I heard Nancy Pelosi talk about the Obamacare legislation, and she said the phrase, "Let's pass it so we can find out what's in it," that's when I went over the top. I said, "Uh-oh, we're in trouble here," and I recognized that we need to refocus our government again in a manner that where legislators and the people don't have some gulf between them, and where people are actually being heard by the legislators. And that's when I got involved, when I realized that there was something amiss. And then, of course, you know, when I recognized that there were $14 trillion in the hole, you know, and what does that hold for the future of our children and our grandchildren? I mean, that just acerbated my anxiety. Yeah.
Right, and that's exactly the same way. Exactly the same way, George. I'm going to ask you to hold for 1 second. We're going to take a break. I'm going to bring in. I believe that this is Armando Vera from South Texas. How are you, Armando?
Great.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, who's this, please?
This is Danielle Chavez.
Oh, Danielle Chavez. Now this is amazing. Now this is George. You're going to be proud of this young woman. Here is a young woman, a Hispanic young woman, who's now a college student at Arizona State University, right, Danielle?
Yes, it is.
And I met Danielle through what can I call him? Your better half, Fernando. No, you're the better half, right, Fernando Trevino?
Yeah,
and George, this is a young conservative couple, and I wanted to get. I wanted to get your opinion tonight, Danielle, on this topic. You, as a young conservative, I think you have the future ahead of you. You know,
mm-hmm.
George and I, we're fighting for the present, but you've got the future. What are the issues that motivated the things that motivate you as a young conservative Hispanic?
What really got me involved looking at partisan politics back in high school was. I wanted less government involvement in my life. I didn't want to grow up and have the government dictate everything I needed to be doing and how my paycheck was going to be spent, you know, on their taxes and what they need. I didn't want anyone telling me what to do. And I wanted to, you know, I believe that we can live our own lives and we don't need, you know, Big Brother standing over our backs telling us, you know, what we need to be doing. And that's really what got me involved and got me thinking about politics. And
yeah. Now, Danielle, how prevalent is that point of view among some of the other Hispanic college students that you hang around with or you go to school with? Do they have that same concern about your liberties and taxes and what's going to happen to my country in the future if we keep spending money? Are you guys talking about stuff like that?
To a certain extent, I'm at a really interesting campus over here. We have a lot of journalism students, so a lot of people choose to keep their political opinions to themselves. And naturally, you know, it is a college campus, so people are a little more liberal here, unfortunately. But it definitely is a topic, and I know something that Fernando and I always joke about is that when you graduate from high school, all you want to do is be an adult. You don't want anyone telling you what to do. And then suddenly people are, you know, voting for these policies that dictate how to live your life or how to spend your paycheck. And it kind of contradicts what people believe.
Right. No, isn't that great, George? Isn't this absolutely exciting?
I think that's fantastic.
Isn't it fantastic
to have a young person
like this? Isn't this great?
It is fantastic because, let me tell you, when I hear the Wall Street kids, when I hear those protesters, and I have to call them kids, I'm sorry, But I, when I hear those protesters from the Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street group, you know, and what they have to say, it sends chills up my back. And then when it's so gratifying to hear somebody like Danielle talking right now, you know, and then to be a Hispanic, that's even better.
Right. No, and I think this is the wonderful thing that, you know, Danielle, you got involved in this for some of the same reasons that George and I got involved. And that is that, you know, I was very concerned about the way government was spending money in 2009. I felt the stimulus was a huge expenditure. I never thought it would stimulate the economy, and I turned out to be right. But these are issues that concern us as Hispanics, and it's great to see you and Fernando and a lot of other young people thinking that way, because you are the future. Eventually, you will have to carry the flag forward, Daniel.
Yeah, and I, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, you are inheriting this this terrible debt that we're looking at, and you know, I mean, everything that we argue about. I mean, I just came from a meeting at City Hall this evening, where some bureaucrats from the county had the nerve to say that we need to dictate. That was their words. We need to dictate as to what kind of car people are driving. Now, if that isn't, you know, if that isn't government telling us what to do, I don't know what is.
Right.
I don't know what is.
Yeah. And this is exactly right. And, of course, we're having the big debate about health care. And, you know, the Obamacare law is now headed to the Supreme Court, where people like me, I hope it's declared unconstitutional. But when I think of the government doing health care, Danielle and George, it wasn't so much the constitutional issue. It was the fact that I just didn't think that the federal government, the same federal government that cannot run the post office, the same federal government that doesn't know how 2,000 guns got into the hands of Mexican cartels, the same federal government that just gave a $500 million loan guarantee to Solyndra and the company goes broke a year later. I mean, if the government cannot do those things right, how can they be expected to manage health care or the health industry, which is anywhere from 14% to 16% of our GDP? So it's not that I don't trust. I mean, bureaucrats are nice people like anybody else, but government was not meant to be running healthcare systems. That's not the function of government, certainly not under our Constitution, Daniel.
No, I completely agree. And, in fact, the post office analogy is one that I use really often with a lot of my friends here who have opposite political views of myself. I always ask them, you know, would you rather send a letter or your package of, you know, your expensive package to your grandmother via the post office or FedEx or UPS? And then I go, oh, the post office always messes everything up. I said, yeah, that's government run.
Amen.
Send the government run entity for you.
Right. No, and I say this, I have a cousin who works in the post office. In fact, he's a postmaster. And I've talked to him a lot about this. The people at the post office are nice people, but it's just that there are certain things that government can do and certain things that government cannot do, and that's why the Founding Fathers created the Constitution they created, and that's also why they gave us the 10th Amendment, because there are certain things that the states can do better than the federal government. We've got about 5 minutes left, but I wanted to ask both of you your opinion about something that I believe in very much with respect to immigration reform. I actually think, Danielle and George, that the states ought to have an opportunity to fix the immigration problem. I'm not talking about giving people citizenship or green card. Obviously, that's a federal function. But allow the states, for example, whether it's in Arizona or here in Texas, to actually negotiate directly with the undocumented and see if they can issue work visas or work permits so that some of these people can work in the state and they can go back and forth to their country without any problem, because they'll be here at least working legally. They're not citizens, but they'll be here working legally. What do you think of that, Danielle?
I agree with you 100%.
You're agreeing with me too much tonight. I must be having
know,
too much of...
I know I am. I should be fighting.
I'm going to have
but...
to talk to Fernando and tell Fernando that you agree too much with me. But I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Right. But, no, I agree with you. I'm a big proponent of states' rights, obviously. And I think it's the same issue we had when we separated, when we became a country. We didn't want someone over across the pond telling us what to do, but I think the states definitely know their needs better than the federal government. I mean, who better to negotiate than someone who's next door instead of someone who's thousands of miles away?
That's right. And, George, your thoughts on that?
I agree, because all we have to do is look at what's happening in Alabama right now. If Alabama had been given the opportunity to, you know, to handle their immigration issues a lot better than what they've had to do, then they would have been able to offer an issue work permits for people who are working in the fields, and thus they wouldn't have the problems that they're having right now.
That's right, and I think in many cases the reality is that what many of these citizens or many of these people are actually looking for is the opportunity to work.
That's
and if they could work legally, not only would they be able to, as I say, go in and out of the country without having to hide themselves or get fake documents, but they would also be able to operate within the country or within the state with certain guarantees. Obviously, they wouldn't be as exploited as many of them are right now. And I think they would be able to, I think they would live a better life being able to operate legally. Well, I want to thank both of you so much for joining me tonight. Daniela, it's really a treat. I'm very delighted that you did this. You got to do this more often. You got to call in more often.
I do.
No, I love hearing it. I mean, I love hearing from college students. Of course, I have two that just graduated from college and one in the Army, but it's always a lot of fun to hear from young people, particularly young people who agree with me so much. Come on, Daniela. You're going to have to call in one day and say you disagree with me on something.
I will.
All right,
one day. We'll find something.
All right, that's right, we will. But please give my best to Fernando for, I know he was the one who told you about the show, and give my best to him and tell him we're very proud of what he's doing at Texas A&M, but tell him he's got to get the Aggies to stop losing games in the last quarter.
Oh, gosh, yes, please.
No, he does.
I mean, that is becoming a problem. I'm going to have to talk to Fernando and see what influence he has over Coach Sherman, because this is a real problem. But Daniel, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. And George, the same to you as always.
Thank
it's
you
a
very
real
much.
Pleasure to have you, both of you, and to everybody who participated in our roundtable tonight. We're going to take a little break. Good night
great
to
program,
both of you.
Great program.
Thank you very much. We're going to take a
bye
little
bye.
Break, and we'll be right back. Good night, Daniel, and good night, George.
Hey, bye.
Bye-bye. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and thank you so much for staying with us the whole hour tonight. I thought we had a great show. We spoke to Fausta Wirtz at the top of the show. We spoke with Adriana Boyne. We spoke with George Rodriguez, and there at the end with Daniel Chavez, a very, very nice young woman, Hispanic young woman, who's attending university in Arizona. I think she's a journalism major, and she's doing great. And, of course, her friend Fernando Trevino has also been on our show before. He goes to Texas A&M, and the two of them, of course, are wonderful young people who are great examples to the young people today that there is a future, and there's a conservative future. And I was so proud of Danielle, how well-spoken, how articulate she is on the issues, and Well, I'm very excited that she joined us tonight. Of course, George Rodriguez from San Antonio, we've spoken to him many times, and he's out there and, carrying the flag and doing all the great things to promote the Hispanic community. The bottom line is that Hispanics are a very diversified group, and there's a lot of things that we like. There's a lot of things that we talk about. And I mentioned before that some of us are interested in national security. Some of us are interested in economic issues. Many of us are interested in immigration reform. I am. Many are also interested, for example, in Afghanistan. Many are interested in tax policy. Many are interested, for example, in how the Department of Justice is mishandling these immigration laws across the country. So there's a lot of things that we're interested in. I hope that tonight you had an opportunity to hear from some Hispanics and get a taste of what's going on. Good night, everybody. Tomorrow night, we're going to change it a little bit, and we're going to be talking about Mitt Romney. And you may be familiar with an article that was in the New York Times about Mitt Romney, an article that can best be defined as only one thing, and that is a hit piece on Mitt Romney. So we'll be talking tomorrow night about that. And then on Thursday night, we're going to be talking about school choice with Israel Ortega of the Heritage Foundation. As we said during the show, school choice is one of the great opportunities for the conservatives to connect with Hispanic parents who are obviously very concerned about the quality of public schools. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Cantu in Dallas saying thank you for listening.